and the removal. And that's precisely what our text does. It reads, on this mountain the Lord will swallow up the veil that shrouds all the people, the pall thrown over the nation. He will swallow up death forever. The shroud is a biblical symbol for all the predicaments that bedevil us each day. They cast their pall not only over our individual situation, but also over the nation. It is like a web woven into the very fabric of everything that happens within our individual lives and in the history of nations. That's why the preacher, in looking around over what was happening in the world, came to the conclusion that all is vanity. There's nothing but futility. All that remains from the past is something that you dig up as dirt. And even for our generation, an enlightened spirit like C.S. Eliot could say about the shepherd, and the wind shall say, here lived a decent, godless people. The only monument, the asphalt road and a thousand rocks left there. To be sure, there is a surface glory about the nation and the way they operate. The prophet says refer to this splendor, but he quickly added it is like grass and like the flower of the field. 21 great nations have perished before us, according to Sandy. Easter is a reminder, however, that the Lord has swallowed up the shroud that covers the people. For a moment it seemed as though the shroud might cover Calvary and bring that event to a tragic end. You can still hear the disillusioned voice of the disciples on the road to Emmaus saying, we had hoped that he might be the one to redeem Israel. Or did they realize that they were talking to the one who had himself already swallowed up the shroud? That the future had become the accomplished task of the present. That now there would be hope in the world, also for the nation. For that is where God is at work. History is the arena of his mighty arm. And with the coming of his son, there is no longer a shroud but hope. And even a man like Pasternak can make one of his characters observe, it was not until after the coming of Christ that time and man could breathe freely. It was not until after him that men began to live for the future. Man doesn't die like a dog in the ditch anymore, but at home in history. The pall has been removed. The future is no longer before me, as the Greeks used to say. It comes after me. For the Lord has said, I know the plans I have for you, plans for welfare, not for evil, to give you a future and a hope. History is not anymore subject to the weak and beggarly element. The epistle lesson you just heard talks about all the enemies of God being put as a footstool under the feet of our Lord Jesus Christ. And so with Easter, there enters into history the category of anticipation. In ancient Athens, in the glorious days of Pericles, could anticipate anything. Electra expected to be exiled from Argos, but that's nothing to anticipate. So it meant the death of all hope. And only because that after he became a Christian, if St. Augustine speaks of time, each moment as having three presents. The present of past recollection, the present of experience, and the present of future anticipation. The future is open, not in the sense of contemporary political theology, as though there were some great cosmic process going on into a better and greater future. It is open because God has swallowed up death in victory forever. There is a force of life at work in history, for the final enemy has been overcome. And so a funeral has been turned into a banquet. The prophet describes it as one with a rich pair of wine, raw materials, grain, food, and this mountain, wine. No wonder the Lord did as his first miracle, the changing of water into wine at the wedding of Cana. For that herald is the beginning of the Messianic age, the start of this banquet, which is likened to a wedding feast. It is embodied and memorialized in the Lord's Supper, which we shall shortly celebrate. Be dear to be sure in memory with our Lord, incorporating ourselves into his ministry and into his words and work. But at the same time, it plays the note of anticipation. We continue what he began. For the fourth part of the Passover service, he promised to drink with us. The celebration is still open for the future. And even now we can say, this is our God, for whom we have waited to deliver us. We can turn that future of the Old Testament book into the present. Let us rejoice and exult in his deliverance. How can we help it? We're not turning forward to some abstract ideal somewhere in the universe. For all this takes place on this mountain, Mount Zion, and souls into the sea of the church. And certainly you will see the veil being lifted from the element. A symbol that a funeral has been turned into a banquet. For at work among the nations, even among the Gentiles, is God's truth. And the social and political structure may be compared to the scaffolding around the ark, which Noah built. So when the flood came, the scaffolding was torn away, and the ark went afloat to save people by water. The cloud over the nations has been swallowed up in the Easter victory, and we live in the day of fulfillment. There's nothing that needs to be added. All we need to do, and all that we are doing, is awaiting the striking of the hour. We came to hear that voice in the apocalypse, that loud voice from the throne which says, not in the future of hope, but in the present of transformation. Behold, the dwelling of God is with men, The New Jerusalem has come down from heaven as a bride adorned for her husband. She has had been washed away, mourning and crying and saying, I don't know. This is no more, for the former things have passed away. The shroud of pure futility and illusion has been removed. Let us rejoice and exult.